Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast. The People's Revolution.
Welcome to the Social Justice Warrior Happy Hour here on 3CR 855 AM, a summer special brought to you by Nick and Katie. Hey, Nick.
Hey.
We did an episode last week about the bushfires, introducing ourselves. I just would cover that again quickly. So Nick does Freedom of Species, long-time animal rights activist, involved with other social justice movements, and a sociologist, teaching on issues like social inequality. I'm a social justice lawyer, also long-time animal rights activist, involved with other causes as well, including being volunteer lawyer for refugees. And together we do a podcast, Progressive Podcast Australia. We're doing these summer specials in the style of that podcast, talking about general social justice issues. And today we're going to be talking about some common criticisms of the left. And we'll speak about the bushfires as well and the rally that happened on Friday. We opened with a little clip from NOFX song, Marxist Brothers. Mm-hmm. So what is the left, Nick?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about this. We're talking about common criticism of the left, so we should talk about, like, yeah, defining the left. And I guess I'd define the left and right in an economic sense, of the left being about, transferring the wealth from, I guess the left being about having more equality in the economy in an economic sense, and the right being about having more inequality and sort of transferring the wealth to the richer. So the example of right-wing economics would be the current Liberal government in Australia, cutting taxes for those earning $250,000, for example.
But not raising Newstart.
Exactly. So shifting that wealth from the poorest to the richest, whereas the left is more about wanting that, wanting things to be more equal. And obviously the left is very broad to different degrees in different ways, etc. But that's kind of how I see it.
And socially progressive.
Well, that's why I wanted to bring in, I guess, in this show, we're talking not just in an economic sense, but also other things associated with the left would be things like, you know, feminism, anti-racism.
Rights for Aboriginal people.
Exactly, yeah. Disability rights, all those kind of things. And I think, yeah, we definitely...
Queer rights.
Yeah, we definitely fall in the left in both of those categories, economically and socially as well. And I think...
No, you're very fiscally concerned.
I think it's...
You're like, I don't mind gay people, but frickin' don't raise Newstart.
Yeah.
You know, those people are so weird.
Malcolm Turnbull, basically. But yeah, I guess when we're talking about left and criticism, left, I think when people are criticising the left, they're not just talking about that economic, they're often talking about these social justice issues. I think it is important to include them as well, because they are important, and again, they are relevant to these critiques. So yeah, I guess I'd want to sort of just basically put my argument up front about when I've been hearing these criticisms from people who are not on the left. And I would say there is some validity to some of these criticisms, but I think what people aren't on the left often don't realise is that people on the left are aware of these, and these discussions are going on within the left as well,
absolutely.
A lot of these critiques. So I guess that's one thing I want to say up front. I think we'll get straight into it.
They like to think we can criticise one thing about the left, therefore it can invalidate everything.
Yeah.
Instead of us being like, no, we want that criticism so we can evolve and get better.
Yeah, and people within the left are raising similar criticisms as well. But what we're going to do is we're going to play a video from Barack Obama. And this is, a talk he gave, which has, you know, been played in a lot of media outlets, et cetera. I saw it on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. Fairly recent, yeah. And basically challenged in this idea of so-called woke culture on the left, I guess. So, yeah, we'll play Barack Obama, and then, yeah, I guess for the rest of this episode, we're going to sort of break down what he says and sort of look into some of these criticisms, other criticisms, and we're going to incorporate some of the points about the bushfires throughout this discussion, as well as having a discussion exclusively on the bushfires at the end of the show as well. So, yeah, here is Barack Obama to kick things off.
This idea of purity and you're never compromised and you're always politically woke and all that stuff... You should get over that quickly. The world is messy. There are ambiguities. People who do really good stuff have flaws. Like if I tweet or hashtag about how you didn't do something right or used the wrong verb, or then I can sit back and feel pretty good about myself. Because, man, you see how woke I was? I called you out. If all you're doing is casting stones, you're probably not going to get that far.
So that was Barack Obama speaking, and I think we can sort of break what he said in two parts. So I think the first part is about like politics, like electoral politics, and not being too pure about doing the right policies and negotiating and compromising. And the second part is more about social movements and call out culture and online culture and those kind of things. And so we're going to talk about the online aspect, call out culture, et cetera, after, but I thought we'd tackle the political aspect first. And these are definitely discussions going on, particularly in the US at the moment, with who's going to be the Democratic candidate. Candidates like Bernie Sanders, are they realistic according to the mainstream media and the Democratic establishment? Or do we need to sort of have politicians kind of doing much the same thing? And I think, again, bringing in climate change, this is where this idea of this like cautious centrism and not going too far and compromising and negotiating, etc., is really shown to be very flawed, again, particularly in the context of climate change. And I wanted to bring that back to Australia. And maybe, Katie, you can read this. This is from the newdaily.com.au, referring to Labor leader, opposition leader, Anthony Albanese.
So he said, do you want me to read just to quote the whole thing? He basically was saying that Australia could continue to mine and export coal while also having strong climate change policies. He says, if Australia stopped exporting today, there'd not be less demand for coal. The coal would come from a different place. So it would not reduce the emissions, which has to be the objective. I don't see a contradiction between that and having a strong climate change policy.
Yeah, and this reminds me a little bit of some of those on the right who are saying, well, like we covered last week, Australia only has 1% of emissions, so who cares, really? Mm. That's kind of what he's saying. Someone else will do it. But
yeah,
it's about making a stand, I guess, on that.
Well,
on that
yes, issue. But also what do the scientists say in terms of what do we have to leave in the ground just to ensure things don't reach a catastrophic level for everyone on the planet?
Yeah.
So this is what it's got to be about. Politics, they talk about compromising and I guess, you know, they play dirty tricks and there's lies and there's deals and all these kinds of things. But this challenge, we just have to listen to what the scientists say.
Mm-hmm.
So if we do have a Royal Commission in this, which is something that Scott Morrison has flagged recently, then you have to just implement what the scientists say we have to implement.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and politics isn't like that.
No.
And we have a conservative, extremely weak, coal-loving leader right now. Mm. We've got the Murdoch press being incredibly misleading. And, you know, I was reading a bit of it today and they were saying that, well, according to the New York Times, The Guardian, we haven't been factual, but that's just not true. I'm like, oh, yeah.
That was the Australian, right?
The Australian, yeah. Yeah, the New York Times, those lefties, those radical lefties. So we just, it's basic. We have to do what the scientists say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I think in the context of climate change, I think these bushfires in Australia are a real line in the sand moment in terms of discussions around climate change. And those, basically no one wants to be associated with climate change denial. It was quite fringe before, but Scott Morrison, as much as it is somewhat hypocritical, has said, you know, when no one's denying the link between climate change.
Even though people in his party are.
I know, but yeah. I'm saying it's not necessarily genuine, but the fact that he feels like he needs to come out and says something about the discussion as climate change comes more real. I even saw Rupert Murdoch saying none of us are climate change deniers as well, even though, you know, his publications definitely do publish climate change denial, but no one wants to be associated with it. And that is definitely important. But also, I think we also need to challenge this idea of this sort of so-called sensible, moderate centrism.
This idea that if you're in the middle, that's the best. If you go too far left or too far right, that's not good. But being in the middle, sensible centrist, pragmatic centrism, but I don't think that's true with any kind of issue. Mm. You know, when we're talking about Indigenous rights, racism, like, you know, let's be in the middle about whether racism's okay or not. But with an issue like climate change, it's just based on the science. Sorry, there's no like, well, the scientists said, let's go in the middle.
Yeah.
It's, you know, let's side with 99% of the scientists on this.
Yeah.
And we have to do what needs to be done. That's it.
Yeah, and so that position, rather than being sensible and pragmatic and serious or whatever, is actually really dangerous in the context of climate change. So we're going to bring you just a tiny bit of the rally. So this is the rally from Friday in Melbourne, Protest Sack ScoMo, Fund the Fireys, Climate Action Now Victoria by Uni Students for Climate Justice. So we're just going to play a little bit that sort of fits into this discussion here. And you can check out the whole thing if you're interested. I'll mention the link after this. But this is Adam Bandt from the Green Party and member for Melbourne as well, and basically talks about, I mean, most of the speech will be about criticising Scott Morrison, but this looks at, yeah, this sort of what another one of the speakers at the rally said, Labor speaking out of both sides of their mouth of wanting to continue, you know, coal exports, etc., and also wanting to act as though they're strong climate change. So I did want to mention the sound quality isn't the greatest. That's why we're only playing a little bit.
It was raining.
It was very, there was lots of people there. So I think they're bumping up the sounds. Right. Those are distorting a bit. Yep. That's why we're only playing less than 30 seconds. But we did want to give you at least a little bit of a taste from this rally. So this is Adam Bandt.
And I hope that there's an epiphany from the leader of the opposition over the summer, because I was gutted to find that while New South Wales was burning, he was out parroting Tony Abbott's lines, and he became Anthony Albanese saying that coal has a big future in this country. Well, no. If we're going to kick Scott Morrison out and replace him with someone, it is going to be with someone who wants to quit coal and tackle the climate emergency.
So that was Adam Bandt speaking at a climate protest on Friday the 10th of January. And
you want to talk about the rally? Because yeah. I couldn't go because I was unwell. But tell me a bit about the rally in Melbourne.
Yeah, sure. And first of all, if anyone does want to listen, I put the audio of the full rally up online so you can hear all the speakers. Just search Climate Protest Victoria on archive.org. And yeah, there was interesting speakers.
There were a lot of people, right, despite the rain.
A lot of people, yeah. I think
thousands.
The organisers estimated 30,000. I'm always horrible with estimates, but there was a lot of people
there. At least
there.
Thousands.
Definitely thousands. Yep. Some great speeches. Adam Bandt's speech was really good. There was someone talking about the connection between capitalism and the climate. There was some great speakers bringing in Indigenous perspectives as well on this issue
And the rallies were held Australia-wide. Yep, so the Sydney rally looked absolutely huge with the aerial footage.
Yep.
People around Australia all coming out on this issue.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it was great to see so many people turn out in Melbourne.
A bit selfish, though.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I want to get onto. So both the Victorian police and Dan Andrews called for the protest to be postponed due to the drain on police resources during the fires. After the rally, Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews blasted climate change protesters for diverting resources from critical needs.
They actually didn't divert any police from that. In any case.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I think you mentioned with the IMARC blockade, all those police resources, pepper spraying, shoving journalists out the way, etc. And I sent them a tweet like, we actually didn't need all those resources.
Yeah.
This is a peaceful rally. And the idea that we can just postpone this into a time when, let's just wait till the bushfires die down. But this is the new normal. The bushfire is going to continue for some time.
Yeah.
And we have to call for action. And I mean, I'm just increasingly more and more disappointed with Dan Andrews, who calls himself a progressive. And
so he's from Labor, the sort of centre-left party, and likes to call himself progressive.
But, yeah, I mean, Victoria is probably the most progressive state in the nation.
Yeah.
In terms of laws and people's attitudes. Mm. And this is what we get, you know, and I just think it's terrible. Because, I mean, look at all that police brutality that happened at the IMARC blockade.
Yeah.
There's no Royal Commission on it. There isn't an independent body that looks into it, because IBAC refer most of their claims back to the police.
Yeah.
This has to happen. I mean, I think it's appalling. Like, if I was a member of the police force, I would want to be held to a higher standard.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because during blockade IMARC, Dan Andrews came out and just said, I support everything the police did, that they're great and just no question at all. And it's interesting you mentioned the police there, because on a side note, I think that just gives a green light to whatever the police want to do.
Absolutely.
He's giving it a green light, which is really dangerous, obviously. But even the police were not as sort of unquestioning as Dan Andrews. So just one picture I shared around in light of this was in terms of saying maybe the activists wouldn't mind if the police police didn't show up after Blockade Imar was there was one police officer who had on their badge, like near their body camera, EAD hippie, like eat a dick hippie.
Right,
like,
so homophobic, but also abusing.
Yeah.
And he was at IMAR, the Blockade Imar. He was wearing that openly while on duty.
And that's what they
feel like they have complete immunity.
Well, and basically, and then so I saw the tweet with that, and then the Victoria Police tweeted and said, yes, this picture is correct, and we're taking action.
Mm.
Otherwise, beyond this, we did a really good as professional response and all of a sudden. But it's like even they were like not giving a total green light to anything.
Dan Andrews wasn't. But it's funny, like when they started knocking the Channel 7 journalists out the way, the coverage Channel 7 had was quite different after that.
Yeah, that was
like,
really interesting.
Oh, so, I guess maybe they are being a bit full on.
Yeah.
Like, but before that, they were like, oh, it's just ridiculous.
Well, I think they're like, oh, the climate change, the protesters must be bringing it on themselves.
Yeah.
And then they're standing there reporting the police are brutal to them. And similar to the protests in Hong Kong, where I think the coverage was quite sympathetic, partly because the journalists were experiencing that police brutality firsthand. The same thing happened here in Victoria. So no one was diverted from the bushfires. I did read an article and they were basically saying no one was diverted, but it meant people couldn't have a rest and that kind of thing because they were at that protest. But we don't hear the same thing for police at the cricket, for a casino or whatever. So I wanted Katie...
But also the firefighters aren't having a rest.
Mm,
we've got volunteers.
Yeah.
The government could right now say we're going to fund professional firefighters. We're going to start paying them. We're going to take... It's not like we're a poor country. We're a very rich country. We just like to divert it so that people get richer.
Mm.
They could do that immediately.
Yeah.
And the same with the police. If they want the police to have a break, you know, well, if they were funding the firefighters, the police wouldn't need to be as involved.
Yeah.
But it's just ridiculous. There was in The Australian, they were saying, imagine if these thousand people instead directed into helping people with the bushfires. How do you know they're not?
Mm.
You know, you were at that rally. We've donated... you know, quite a bit of money to various causes, you know, related to the bushfires.
Hmm.
We, on a personal level, do what we can to fight climate change in terms of being vegan, not having a car. We don't fly as much as we used to. We don't have children. Like, these are things that we've been doing for a number of years to help with the climate. And it's just, like, how do they know that we don't help with the climate?
Well, I think the right wing are generally, like, if there's an issue, deal with the symptoms. If you do anything, deal with the symptoms, but never for the cause.
The right have loved this idea of blaming protesters. That's been, like, a good thing for them to report on right now.
Mm.
And that's because Dan Andrews.
Yeah.
Instead of just being like, well, you know, let's go ahead, obviously everyone be peaceful, which they were, right?
Yeah.
There weren't people trying to stir up trouble for the sake of stirring up trouble in terms of left people.
No. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit like poverty. It's often, you know, if you feed the poor, it's good. And then you ask why they're poor and you're called a communist or a negative name or whatever.
Yep.
So it's like, of course, responding to these issues, we can't just talk about climate change. We need to respond and help people, but both are really important. But I thought in terms of this whole don't protest, there's a Facebook post that Katie will read from Gabrielle Di Vietri on Facebook. And I thought this, really nailed this issue.
So police... every night or at Crown Casino during catastrophic bushfires. The police were at the cricket during the catastrophic bushfires. Police all over the place on New Year's Eve during catastrophic bushfires. They didn't cancel the cricket. They didn't shut down the casino, ask the public to stay home on New Year's Eve. No, VicPol's request to cancel Friday's protest is a manipulation of democracy, an attempt to quash the public growing outrage at the incompetence and negligence of our government.
If not now... Oh, sorry.
The quote continues.
Yeah.
The climate crisis will continue and will become worse. If not now, when is the right time to protest?
And this is my point. I was just going to say, just building on from that, it's often spoken about in media like The Australian, by some politicians, etc., of protesters, a totally unnecessary indulgence. So it's kind of lowest on the priority list, right? So it's like...
And I guess they're like, oh, you kind of Western people, we don't know what you've got. Like, it's just, it's this kind of luxury thing.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have anything better to do, so we're going to go out and protest.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, in terms of Dan Andrews, in terms of the Victoria Police, etc., protesting is less important than going to the cricket, going to the casino, etc. Because from what I've heard, there's been no discussion at all about, well, you know, we need all the police to do their job. We're going to cancel the Big Bash cricket, for example. The cricket's not going to go ahead. There's no discussion of that at all.
Yeah, like, it's a state of emergency. We've got to divert resources, and that's how serious it is, which they could do fine, go ahead and do that if you really do need the police.
Yeah.
But why is it just this one protest that you singled out?
And again, because they view it as the least...
And you didn't even end up diverting police.
No, and so that is the least important, again, according to the Victorian government and Victorian police. And getting back to this so-called realistic and being, you know, being pragmatic and these kind of things we hear from more centrist politicians, I'd also like to point out that this isn't just an ideological discussion. There's a financial basis to it as well. So I'm looking into donations from the fossil fuel, companies. So Labor received,
half $1 billion.
Yeah, $500 million.
2015, that's a 2015 report.
Yeah.
In the context of industry opposing an emissions trading scheme in 2015.
Yeah. And they continue to take money from fossil fuel companies. And so this is, you know, I've got no idea about the individual motivations of politicians, but either way, the Labor Party is taking money from these things. And same with, you know, many Democratic politicians in the US, et cetera. And then so to act like they're just being pragmatic, it's like it's partly a result of the interests they're serving as well.
Yeah.
Even an example from the US, Hillary Clinton, for example, was pushing for universal healthcare many years ago. And then she became the person who got the most donations from the pharmaceutical companies. This is from Michael Moore documentary Sicko. And then she changed her position and sort of watered down her stance on that as well. And also referring back to our discussions last week about insiders and outsiders and mainstream media and alternative media, etc. We're watching a video from the Young Turks about this political donations, and sort of in polite sort of insider media, mainstream media, it's sort of impolite. You never hear when they're talking about fossil fuel, maintaining fossil fuels, etc., of the fact that they're receiving money from these companies. Mm. Never brought up.
Mm.
And so I guess, again, if you do bring up this too often, you might, again, fear becoming an outsider again. And so a lot of independent media, like the Young Turks, for example, are bringing that. But you definitely...
Then they get barred from like the mainstream,
or they never get invited at all.
Yeah.
And so it's like, first of all, you don't bring up that issue. And if you do, you never talk about it as if it's something that actually influenced your policies, which the Young Turks were arguing for. And so it's like, you don't bring it up. And if you do, you never act as though it actually influenced their policies. And it's like, if it doesn't influence their policies, why are they giving
why
them this
taking
money?
It?
Just a donation, just a free present. And just one final point, going back to our points on the media from last week, this idea of objectivity. Often the media, ABC, included the idea we've got to show both sides. So we've got to show the climate change deniers, and we've got to show those who are talking about...
We've got to show people who don't want koalas dying and those who love koalas dying.
Yeah, I guess...
Burn the koalas, they chant, just to be objective.
Yeah, and then we've got to, on the other side, show those who are like, this is going to be really, you know, really serious and have a devastating impact. And that the media, often the mainstream media, often spoken about that as, you've got these people on one side who are, you know, saying it doesn't exist at all. Then you've got these Extinction Rebellion protesters who say the world's going to end and stuff. And sort of this assumption that it must be somewhere in the middle, which, as Katie's mentioned many times, is not, but the science is on the side of those so-called climate alarmists who are saying this is going to have a significant impact. So, I think that this, again, this idea of objectivity really doesn't help us in light of climate change. So we're going to take a track and then we're back with more. So we were talking there about Barack Obama, talking about this idea of being pragmatic within politics. And so in the next part of the show, we're going to move on to his critique about, so-called woke culture and this idea of like virtue signaling and cancelling people and calling people out on social media, etc. So the track we're going to play is by David Rovics, "I'm a Better Anarchist Than You." I do have to note that it does contain some swearing. This song, I guess it's all about this idea of doing positive things, but it's kind of, I thought of this in light of that virtue signal. It's kind of like, I'm better than you. And this idea is like self-righteousness rather than actually caring about the causes. I thought this was a good lead in to that discussion.
I don't drive a car because they run on gas. But if I did, it'd run on biomass. I ride a bike or sometimes a skateboard. So fuck off all you drivers and your yummy hordes sitting all day in the traffic queues. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't eat meat. I just live on moldy chives or the donuts that I found in last week's dumpster dives. Well, you people in that restaurant, I think you are so sad when you could have been eating bagels like the ones that I just had. I think it is the same all the birds watching me do. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't wear leather. Moldy coffee sack. I like to hop on freight trains. I think that is so cool. It's so much funner
The Setting Sun Film Festival in Melbourne's West is calling for entries until 31st of January. Enter your short or feature film into our international festival with the cult following and see your film screen at Yarraville's Art Deco Sun Theatre in May. The festival runs for 7 days and features a culturally diverse program that includes Australia's first female filmmakers program and a wide range of categories and genres. Lots of prizes to win. All details on our website, settingsun.com.au. The Setting Sun Film Festival is a 3CR supporter.
This is David Rovics, and you are tuned to 3CR, 8:55 a.m., Melbourne, Australia. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change.
Welcome back to the Social Justice Warrior Happy Hour, a summer special here on 3CR. And today we're talking about common criticisms of the left and also incorporating some points on the bushfire crisis and climate change. So earlier on in the show, we heard a clip from Barack Obama, who was talking about criticizing this idea of woke culture on the left and also talking about pragmatic politics, which we've already spoken a bit about. And so we wanted to get into this idea of topics like woke culture, virtue signaling, cancel culture, all these sort of common terms associated with common criticisms of the left. So just to bring into this discussion, I wanted to bring in some points from the Ezra Klein Show, which is a podcast I've recently started listening to, really enjoyed. You can check it out at vox.com or search the Ezra Klein Show on your favorite podcast platform. And yeah, particularly I want to bring in the episodes, The Moral Philosophy of the Good Place, which is a Netflix show we've been watching. I'm sure many people have watched it on Netflix. Just a comedy show, but deals with some big philosophical issues. And also, to a lesser degree, we're going to talk about the show with Peter Singer on The Lives You Can Save, all about effective altruism and charity and that kind of thing. So yeah, just the first point I wanted to make from the show, The Moral Philosophy of the Good Place, and this had the creator of The Good Place, Michael Schur, and also an academic consultant they had for the show, Pamela Hieronymy, and she's a professor on psychology and philosophy and that kind of stuff. And she made the point that when we're talking, this wasn't about woke culture, but it's kind of similar. It's all about what it is to be a good person. And a lot of these discussions are taking place within a Western context, like there in the US, for example. And she was sort of saying, well, the fact that I am not a good person is kind of besides the point and is pretty boring. It's more about, like, we should have these discussions rather than about, am I a good person? It's more about the person who doesn't have access to clean water in poorer countries or whatever. So it's not so much about you being a good person, but it's more we should have these discussions more about the people who are suffering. And I guess that was one critique I have of this so-called woke culture, is that often it focuses on those who have privilege. And obviously from an intersectional perspective, many of us have, we're privileged in one way and disadvantaged in other ways, etc. But either way, if you look at myself, for example, one thing we've spoken about on the show is ableist language, so language which discriminates against people with disability. And to me, it shouldn't be about whether I'm woke or not on this issue. It should be about people with disability. Mm. And in terms of how people with disabilities are harmed, there's, like, you know, the physical harm, there's language, there's all kind of a spectrum which harms people with disability. So it should be more about that is an important issue and that group is important, and therefore we're going to try and always do better with our language rather than about you.
Exactly, reframing it, because I think you can get to these discussions on the left where it just becomes about these privileged people apologizing for their privilege over and over again. It happens at conferences. And instead, acknowledge your privilege, but then, you know, give the space to those people or talk about, you know, change. Mm-hmm. I mean, and often, like, the people that, I mean, at the conference I'm thinking of that were apologizing for it, they weren't super privileged themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. That conference was like, there weren't that many, you know, white cis men talking. So, one, give up the space, but two, don't go over the top in kind of going on and on about your privilege, because then it still just becomes about you.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And I guess that kind of gets back to the next concept we're going to get onto with virtue signaling. So I'm going to give a definition from Sky News because they talk about it a lot. The only reason I know this is from watching Media Watch, and that's how we see sort of Sky News after dark indirectly.
But it's an accurate definition, isn't it?
It is. So basically Sky News defined being concerned with being seen to do the right thing rather than doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And
I mean, what they consider virtue signaling will be very different to what
exactly.
We would consider it.
And yeah, I was thinking about this, the example that they were talking about that was covered on Media Watch. They were talking about a school that had implemented these environmental measures, and they were like, oh, this is virtue signaling. It's like, but again, we only saw a little segment of the show, but as far as I could tell, they hadn't necessarily looked into this school. They were just like, they're doing an environmental thing. It must be virtue signaling.
Yeah, so, but if you're doing it, yeah. If you put up a sign saying we're really green and you don't do anything,
yeah.
That might be. But if you're actually doing things,
yeah.
Then you're just trying to do things to be better for the environment.
And I think for those who do Sky News After Dark, for example, they can't comprehend the idea that someone would be doing something good for the sake of it. So I think they must be virtue signaling. I think that's
it,
why.
It doesn't compute in their brains.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I guess I wanted to, and I was thinking about this once around uni. So at my university, I'm part of the Ally Network for those who are queer or gender.
And you did training.
Did training, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I like many staff members wear an ally lanyard. I am not, I don't identify as part of the LGBTIAQ+. I don't identify
You're an ally.
That way, but I do my best to be an ally. And so I guess that would be, you know, from the right wing, it'd be like all these people wearing lanyards, they're virtue signaling, they're a good person, they're better, that kind of thing. But again, I think if I was ever told, like, this is about you, it's not about the cause, then it's like, well, then I'd take it off instantly. It shouldn't be about me. But hopefully, again, rather than being about us being great people as allies, et cetera, it's more about if there is a student who is transgender or non-binary, they might feel more safe in that environment.
Exactly.
Seeing that.
Exactly.
That,
I think that's a good thing. It's like when people at my university, the lecturers would put up a queer flag on there.
Mm-hmm.
On their door or something like that. It's just letting you know. You know, I work in the area of social justice law, and in our signatures we have a rainbow flag and say we have safe and inclusive legal services. Just trying to say that this is a place, because it often feels very unsafe to be queer in some spaces. So that's all it is. It's not saying we're so great for doing this. It's more just like it's a safe place. And I think like, you know, you did the mental health training, the disability training, and you let your students know that, you know, about the equity services that are available if they have a disability, which a lot of people don't know about. I didn't know about it when I was at uni. And that's just saying, you know, there is that support out there and I'll be supportive, you know, if you have those kinds of issues. Like I've had, there's certain lecturers, I remember the equity department at my university saying, oh, they're really difficult to deal with when it comes to mental health.
Yeah.
And that just shouldn't be the case. You know, it shouldn't be, you have to fight to prove yourself to these people. So that's just saying, okay, cool. Like they get it. I don't have to worry about them being, you know, anti-queer or, you know, not understanding what mental health is.
Yeah, yeah. And I think often a lot of these discussions are, do they care about the cause or are they wanting to be seen to do the right thing? And another thing I always think is, why can't it be both?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people who are, you know, so-called virtue signaling, like, do want to be seen to do the right thing and do also care about the cause. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Yeah.
And
I guess it's if you're kind of bragging and showing off. I mean, I guess we'd know from the animal scene the people who do direct action, but they want to be at the front and they want their photo and they want to post on social media, look at me doing all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And that's something we've discussed on Freedom of Species. So again, it is a discussion, like, you know, I think virtue signaling is a real thing. And I think it is a discussion we have on the left, and this performativity on social media, obviously not just on the left, but in general. A lot of us are very aware of this and have that discussion. But I also wanted to bring in a point actually in support of virtue signaling. So this is, again, going back to the Ezra Klein podcast with Peter Singer. There's this sort of notion in religion, in society in general, you should just get on with doing good things, like donating money that I'm focusing on. Don't tell anyone you're donating money.
Yep.
And Peter Singer was actually saying, no, I want you to tell people you're donating, because then other people might join in. And then that individual action becomes more important. important. So individual actions, whether it's for the environment or whatever, they are important in their own right, but they have a fairly small small impact overall. But if you tell other people about that and that you inspire others to join in, that's where your action has a bigger impact.
Yeah. Yep.
And again, bringing that show, The Good Place, and this was a joke they had on the show, but we noticed they said you gained points for being vegan. So you have these points about whether you get into heaven or not.
Mm.
You gained points for being vegan, but you lost points if you told people you were vegan.
Yeah,
that was one of the little jokes they had on the show. And I was thinking about that in relation to Singer's points on the Ezra Klein show. Actually, you should probably actually gain points for telling people that you're vegan. So,
yeah, not in a self-righteous kind of way, but just, so that they're aware and they're like, oh, and then why is that?
Well, exactly, because I think they're in a lot of people's minds, and those who are criticizing virtue signaling, et cetera, the best vegan would be someone who's vegan their whole life, never tells anyone, which is obviously impossible. A lot of social gatherings are based around
that's
food,
the thing,
et cetera.
It's not like we want to bring it up, but it just comes up because of we're out eating or whatever it is.
But either way, like I think in a lot of people's minds, the ideal vegan is someone who's vegan their whole life. No one ever knows they're vegan. And to me, that person would have some kind of positive impact in terms of reducing demand and shifting industries in a very small way. But actually someone who's more outspoken about their veganism.
Advocate for veganism.
Yeah, I think that is like half of veganism is an economic boycott, but the other half is actually more about changing attitudes and changing that culture and challenging the culture
that
devalues animals. So actually someone who's more outspoken, rather than being negative and virtue signaling, etc., they're actually been having a bigger impact their veganism. And I guess like the same with other issues that we've covered on the show. For example, we've spoken about living car free, for example. So right-wing person listen, they're just virtue signaling, but hopefully by giving advice and encouraging people, etc.,
we did an episode how do you live car-free when you need to take dogs to the vet and things like that? Just like practical things, which is a big part of going vegan is practically like, where do I get my shampoo and what do I eat and things like that.
Yeah. And on the Ezra Klein show, he was mentioning this idea that we often think of ethics as an individual kind of thing, because actually we do ethics more collectively. It's very much inspired by those around us. And Ezra Klein was mentioned for himself going vegan, for example. It wasn't a change in his mindset. He already had that belief, but it was when his wife went vegan, he had that social support. So again, if people around us are doing all these good things, but we don't know about it, we are less likely to follow along. And just a recent example, I know Katie mentioned donating to the animals and the bushfires. Do you want to talk a bit about that, how people followed on based on...
So, I mean, you'll notice on Facebook that if you donate to a cause, that invites you to share it and everything like that. And so there, by me donating, then my mother donated, my friend donated, her mother donated. And, it flows on because I saw someone donate, so I went ahead and donated.
Yeah.
And it will show which of your friends have donated, not how much, but who's donated.
Yeah.
So I think that's important to just let people know, look, there are these organizations you can give to if you're feeling really upset about what's happening with the animals. There is something you can do.
Yeah. So I think if you are doing something positive, I think the best thing is to do is talk about that.
Share it without being self-righteous and saying, I'm the best, I'm the most woke person in the world or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it can go from this idea of an individual doing something to more of a social movement and more people doing that action. And one thing, virtue signaling is something I've always been aware of. And one thing I've done over the years is carried plastic bags with me, so old plastic bags. So I'm doing an environmental thing, but I know I'm not getting any sort of green benefits, right? So I know I'm purely doing it for the environment. But I was actually thinking about that in light of the Ezra.
You mean because no one thinks that you're bringing secondhand bags?
No, exactly. Yeah. So as far as people know, I'm just carrying a plastic bag.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm definitely not doing this to virtue. So I'm doing this because I care about the environment. But I was actually thinking it would actually be better to carry a green bag, because then it's more about changing that culture, right?
Right.
This idea of bringing your own bags, becoming a social norm. And of course, you don't want to continually buy green bags, et cetera. But if you do have a small number of green bags, and never take plastic bags, that is the best thing to do. So it's like, actually, I'd be better off to virtue signal and show you're doing the right thing, because, I guess as a sociologist and as many people know, like this idea of culture and fitting in with social norms is so important. And when doing the better thing becomes a social norm, people are much more likely to do that as well. So getting into the final little bit of this section, I wanted to talk about some of the more negative aspects of virtue signaling and that kind of thing, looking at cancel culture. But I did want to also give a couple of disclaimers. So again, referring to the Ezra Klein show, Michael Schur, the creator of The Good Place, mentioned a quote from the book chapter, Putting Cruelty First, in the book Ordinary Vices by Judith Glar. And Judith Glar mentioned that if cruelty horrifies us, we must be in a constant state of outrage. So I think often this idea of this sort of outrage culture and cancel culture, people act like it's just something people on the left want to do because they like it.
Like, but as though we don't have anything to do, so we'll just go, what can we be outraged about today? And yeah. I definitely see some friends who are like that, you know, who are just saying, oh, look, there's this, get into this fight on Facebook.
Yeah.
But this, and look at this. Or people, I think it often happens with animal things. People are like, oh, look at this one example of extreme cruelty that's happened. It happens in this country. Rather than just thinking, well, we kill at least, and breed and kill at least 150 billion animals every year just because of animal agriculture. So we don't really need to, that's horrible. But why would you subject yourself to something horrible just to be like, wow, that's horrible?
Yeah, it's not surprising in a speciesist culture that devalues animals and just kills them on a systematic basis. But I did want to mention that, yeah, again, this outrage culture is definitely somewhat justified. And I also wanted to mention my own privilege, which Kate referred to before, in terms of, you know, as someone who's not directly affected by this, it's much easier for me to go, oh, that comedian is misogynistic, but I'm not going to cancel them because they made some great points about drugs and the war and
you mean cancel as in stop watching them? Obviously, you can't cancel.
Well, you know what I mean, but there's efforts online. Yep. Like, let's cancel this person, basically. Yep. And so definitely there is a privilege. I'm certainly not saying, you know, we should never, ever, you know, criticize people, et cetera. And it can be easier for those who have privilege to do that than those who are directly impacted by it. But I guess this idea of, trying to be maybe more forgiving of people within social movements. So one person we watch on The Feed, a show on SBS, Jan Fram, one of the presenters who used to be on that show, she mentioned that when she was 16, she did a rap and she used the N-word.
In a video. She put it up online.
Yeah, put it up online. And she was like, that's horrible. I'd never do that now. Mm. But I don't think that should mean that she's forever, like anything she says is totally done. But we often act that way in politics. I know there was a Greens politician, I believe it was from the Greens, who had some misogynistic rap many, many years ago. And it's like, therefore that guy is not fit to serve. But I think, like, as much as we need to take misogyny seriously, I think if someone is sort of moved beyond that and is improved and would
well,
not
there
do
can
that
be
anymore,
learnings as
yeah,
well.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
Yeah, there are degrees in terms of how we respond to these things.
Yeah.
And it's funny because they always talk about the left being having outrage culture. When that Greens candidate posted about having like weed in her bag,
that was right-wing
outrage culture gone just ridiculous. But you know, there are degrees. I think someone like Woody Allen, who doesn't back down from, you know, these allegations, which I won't go into because it's kind of upsetting topic, but refuses to back down and just keeps going and digs his head in the sand, absolutely, you're gone, you're done, we're done with you. But people who you know, have done something that's problematic but maybe can learn from it, or who are willing to engage and learn from it, it's a different matter.
Exactly. And I think that's, and kind of Obama touched on that back in the start of like using the wrong language, and again, I think we need to
that's part of it. Like, we if we're learning as progressives, we have to first accept the fact that we all will be problematic on some level without even realizing it.
Exactly.
And we have to have this, you know, culture that's, you know, they say call in instead of call out culture, a culture where we talk about it and say, hey, just so you know, like, this made me feel uncomfortable, or I don't think it's okay to say this. We have to have these discussions because none of us are perfect.
Yeah.
But instead of just saying, okay, well, then I'm done with the left, or what, done with these people who criticize me, we have to listen and try to accept and challenge what we think.
Yeah, and I think that gets back to the idea of virtue signaling. I think often if someone is not using the correct language, not necessarily, not like, not intentionally, but just they're not aware of that like particular issue, etc. And Katie mentioned call in versus call out, and I've seen articles online talking about the way in which, well, rather than sort of posting and sort of shaming that person, or, you know, sharing a look at this language this person's using, where it becomes more about like, you, oh, I know better than this person, like, why not have a conversation in person with that person, or send them a private message.
Yeah.
And that way, where continually trying to do better rather than this idea of always, oh, we could be kicked out of this movement. And Vegan Warrior Princess's Attack is a podcast I listen to quite a bit, and that they've been criticizing cancel culture quite a bit on their show, particularly episode 246, where they spoke about this idea of SJW ally scripts. So this idea of social justice warriors, we got these scripts, so I know the right thing to do. And talking about the way in which we've got this cancel culture, which is really toxic, but as long as I follow the script, I'll be okay. But obviously, whatever group we're talking about, they're diverse. So the example they gave was, you know, often a good thing to do, or what's portrayed as a good thing to do, is at the start of the discussion, everyone go around and say their pronouns, so no one is misgendered, and there's sort of acknowledged that everyone has pronouns, not just transgender or non-binary people, but also cisgender people, etc. But one of the a trans person they know is like, I hate that. It makes me uncomfortable. Which, so it's like, there's, you know, obviously
exactly. So and that's. I think that's the same with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people like, well, this is Aboriginal culture. This is what it is. And that's it. So I've just got to do this.
Yeah.
People disagree on these kinds of things.
Exactly. So obviously always try and best to try and do the right thing. But yeah, for those who, don't quite do it, it's like, the idea of trying to do... always trying to do better, and rather than this idea of like you're one step away from being kicked out of this movement, I think we need to make movements, movements that are fun and inching and exciting and trying to bring people in rather than kicking people out, even though, as Katie mentioned, there definitely are times when people absolutely need to be kicked out, but overall trying to do that. And I think one, Collectively Free Kulin Nations is a group here in Melbourne. They're an animal group and also focus primarily on animals while also highlighting other injustices towards refugees, Indigenous Australians, etc. But one thing they said that stuck with me, and I, with the Institute for Critical Animal Studies, organised a conference with them, which was Liberated Futures, all about creating the futures they want. And one thing which that group said, which has stuck with me, is they want to put at least as much energy into creating the world they want to see as challenging the things they don't like in this current world. I think that is the main thing that we're kind of getting across here, I guess, of not always focusing on here's this comedian that's bad, here's this show that's bad, but also here's this comedian I really like, and here's this show, like trying to do that as well on social media and beyond as well. So we're going to play a track now. This is Colour Me Wednesday with Cat Hair. And this is all about not wasting your time with online arguments, etc. So, I thought that was quite relevant in light of all of this. You're listening to the Social Justice Warrior Happy Hour on 3CR.
to summer programming on 3CR. To find out more about our summer specials, go to 3cr.org.au.
Welcome back to the Social Justice Warrior Happy Hour with Katie and Nick here on 3CR, a summer special. We've been talking about the bushfires and common criticisms of the left, and I just want to share this post that I wrote about, I guess, the state of things, the new normal that we're in. Today I woke up to the smell of smoke in my apartment. I couldn't see the city. I rugged up for work on this summer's day and walked out into the rain. The combination of rain and smoke haze is unsettling. At work, colleagues discussed the need to buy face masks. Officeworks was sold out, as has Bunnings. I ordered 3 masks online, but they won't arrive for weeks. My manager's been sending out an email to our team saying that the smell of smoke is not from a fire in the building. People are smelling smoke in the office and thinking there must be a fire. My workplace runs disaster legal help, a special phone line for people who need legal support related to a disaster. We are inundated with calls today and the wait times reach 2 hours. In the meantime, my headaches are triggered each time the haze returns. The rain hasn't been strong enough to wash it away. It reminds me of Beijing, where the only day I saw the sun was after a typhoon. I see many people wearing masks in the CBD, but most don't have the proper ones for protection. I see one pregnant woman, and she's wearing the correct mask. On the tram, visitors from the country are discussing the need to stock up on food and water supplies before returning home. It's a relief to get home and inside, although the smell of smoke still permeates the air. Welcome to the new normal.
Mm. Thanks for that. And yeah, it definitely has, yeah, I think has like hit us really hard. And I did want to also give a disclaimer, like, and I'm going to say something as well.
You mean us, not us directly, but Australia.
Yeah, I did mean us specifically.
Oh,
but
I mean, I don't think we've had too much. Like, it is weird having to check the air quality every morning, but living in like inner Melbourne, in the city.
Well, that's also what I say. I think it was hit us hard in terms of like we always knew the science of climate change, but it was one thing to live through it, even in a fairly small way. And I did want to say that as well. We're going to talk more about like the smoke rather than the fires because that's what we've experienced. Obviously, many around Australia are having it far worse than us, just breathing the smoke from the fires that are burning down their houses, etc. But again, we're sort of focusing on that because that's what we've experienced. And myself as well, thinking about this smoke, again, similar experience of walking around from the store to store trying to find the face mask. I was very much reminded of the Loki song soundtrack to The Struggle 2 featuring Noam Chomsky, which we're going to finish with, which has lyrics like, which you're in a moment, but maybe Katie, can you read these lyrics?
How are we going to define deep when the seas have risen? How can we define woke when our sleep's commissioned? Drowned up by Koch brothers bots, how can people listen? Can't detoxify as we watch the sky fade to grey.
And just like those little lyrics were going through my head as I was walking through, and I was kind of thinking like along some lines, how can we speak of health with this air we're breathing? And I guess also thinking more generally about this idea, we're often told to be healthy, like it's very much an individual decision, right? Like you got to eat right and you got to exercise, which is all true and we can definitely impact our health. But I guess it's just been a stark reminder to me that our health is also determined by much bigger factors, things like inaction on climate change from both major parties, particularly the Liberal Party, obviously, even like the cuts to the fire service from the New South Wales Liberal Party, etc. All these things are affecting our health. Like when we go outside and breathe in this negative air, this is going to have short-term health impacts, potentially long-term health impacts as well. So, just thinking about this idea of air pollution as one example of, our health not just being a result of our own choices, but also these bigger factors as well. So, we're going to finish with that track. A reminder that next week in this time slot, 1 to 2 on Sunday, Freedom of Species will be back. You can listen to all
And that's with new shows, right? Not a
With new shows. Normal program for the 19th of January. You can listen to all the shows at freedomofspecies.org, 3CR, iTunes. We did a recap of that Liberated Futures conference, which I spoke about earlier on in the show, for example. So you can check that out. If you want to hear more from me and Katie, you can hear our podcast at progressivepodcastaustralia.com.
on Stitcher and iTunes as well.
All the usual places. And also, if you're interested, if you're listening to this live, then tomorrow morning on Monday Morning Breakfast on 3CR, so Monday 13th of January at about 7:45 a.m, I'll be on that show discussing bushfires and the impact on animals. You can listen to that on 8:55 a.m. and 3cr.org.au. And you want to put in a correction from our show as well.
Yes, I blame you, Nick, because you should pick me up if I misspeak. That's the whole thing of having a co-host.
It was Katie's correction, but it was my fault.
You know what I mean? We can listen to each other speak and then we can correct each other. So last week I said it was 500,000 animals killed. I knew it was 1 billion. I don't know why I said million. It is 500,000,000. That's unfortunately, it's now gone up to 1.25 billion. But remember, we choose to breed and kill 150 billion animals every year because of animal agriculture. So by going vegan, you can do a huge thing towards helping animals, much more than donating to, you know, a wildlife cause, although you still do those things. Yeah. So let's just keep that in mind. There was a great article on the ABC, the animals we rescue and the animals we don't.
Yeah.
You know, which ones do we actually care about? So just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, so definitely there's a climate emergency, but there's always an animal emergency for those in slaughterhouses, for those being shot in culls by the government, etc. So yeah, I'll talk about more about all that on Monday Morning Breakfast tomorrow. Thanks so much to 3CR. Really encourage people to check out all the shows at 3cr.org.au. You can also donate there as well.
Thanks for letting them have it. Our summer special?
Yep.
Is that what you meant specifically?
Yeah. Thanks. And I think like a lot of the discussions we've had relate to independent media, and 3CR is a really important independent media to support. So that's all for us. And Freedom of Species back next week.
You're listening to Soundtrack to the Struggle 2 by Low Key.
Thank you for joining us, Noam. In Optimism Over Despair, you say, it seems to me unlikely that civilization can survive really existing capitalism. Would you be able to explain that statement for us?
Really existing capitalism is what we can see described in the press day after day. We read that the major banks like J.P. Morgan Chase are increasing their investment in fossil fuels, including the most dangerous, like Canadian tar sands. And all of this is quite understandable on the assumption that the structure of our institutions is geared to maximizing short-term profit and power without regard to what might happen to the world in another 20 or 30 years. But that's both capitalism. But we can't survive that.
Is it the economic system v the ecosystem? How we gonna define deep when the seas have risen? How can we define woke when our sleep's commissioned? Drowned out by cold brother bots, how can the people listen? Can't detoxify as we watch the sky fade to grey. The source devoured corporate power, killed the nation state. Sophisticated murder, defined as innovation. Corporations wine and dine just to mine your information. Amen versus humanity, terrorist who? His search engine knows your thought pattern better than you. In an environment resentful, uprising is essential. The horizon is torrential, think your silence will protect you. Subject to propaganda that terrifies the slumbered. We can jeopardize their cover if we energize the numbers. Collectivize or die, protect your mind or suffer. Life is paradise to some and a paradise to others. Of a tired, retired fireman, knowing he couldn't help a child survive the frying pan. When we riot, we disquiet the Leviathan. Forget Iron Man, I've got an iron lion's diaphragm. My salutations to those with imagination. Doom anticipated, and that's no exaggeration. Your flag doesn't exist. Let me back up that statement. What happens to the nation if the Queen has a tax haven? Pushing these buttons, you don't need a brave heart. Run text.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.